On this edition of WBOI's Field Notes, we've waited weeks, but it's finally here. IU takes on Alabama in the Rose Bowl today. We'll hear from the coaches as well as the marching band in Pasadena. Then Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette drops by to discuss high school award season and what we're looking forward to in the new year. I'll close with notes on the Comets and the new collective bargaining agreement between the players and league, NFL playoff scenarios, and more. That's all next on the first Field Notes of 2026. Thank you for joining us this week, and Happy New Year! I'm Zach Bernard. Well, the big day's finally here. The Rose Bowl is this afternoon from Pasadena. The Hoosiers will take on Alabama with a 4 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. I'll offer score updates during All Things Considered as well. IU will be playing as the number one ranked team in the nation for the first time ever today. It will also be just the second time the Hoosiers have played in the Rose Bowl. But this is familiar territory for Bama. The Crimson Tide have won more than a dozen national championships. Head coach Kurt Cignetti was asked how he could convince his team they were not playing against tradition in Alabama.
You probably know more about the mystique than they do. I mean, our guys just know what they see on tape.
The Hoosiers didn't know who they'd be playing in the quarterfinals until almost 2 weeks after their last game. In that time, there was a lot of focus on IU after it claimed the number one spot with a win over Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Cignetti says it was his job to temper that.
Now, it was all on me to get everybody focused, thinking the way we want them to, because it had a lot of smoke blown up there, you know what, for two and a half weeks, right?
Cignetti and Alabama coach Kalen DeBoer share a similar background. Their first jobs as head coaches were in the lower ranks of college football. IU's head coach says he respects DeBoer, who started at NAIA Sioux Falls.
To come back from 17 points down and come out with a win, and I think it tells you a lot about the character of their football team. They got a lot of great players, they're extremely well coached, and they're a really good team. It'll be a tremendous challenge.
Cignetti started as a head coach at NCAA Division II, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. The more common career path in major college football is becoming a head coach after years as an assistant at the same level. DeBoer says he wouldn't change a thing about his rise.
When the opportunities are there, they get it done. And there's great coaching that you can see to put them in spots to succeed. But also, the guys, you can see they play with a swagger, with a confidence, and as they should with the success they've had.
Joining the Hoosiers in sunny California is the Marching 100. Fifth-year senior Rosa Maria McMahon leads the band as a drum major. In her time at IU, she says she's seen the lows and now the highs.
At the Big Ten championship game, when we won, and we were like, okay, wait, we're going to be going to the Rose Bowl. I remember I like burst into tears because I was so happy.
With more from the Marching 100, here's Aubrey Wright.
Indiana University's band has revered the 1968 Rose Bowl game. As the football team continues its historic season in Pasadena, the Marching 100 are having one of their own. The band's top three leaders, its drum major, lead twirler, and band director, are all women.
And that's something that has never happened in the history of the Marching 100 ever, but also becomes more significant when we realize and think about how the last time we went to the Rose Bowl was prior to Title IX.
Feature twirler Sydney Butts said at the time, there were no women in the marching ranks. Now, leading the band in its 130th season and its second Rose Bowl appearance, she says she has goosebumps.
We understand the weight of this.
The band will perform in the Tournament of Roses parade Thursday morning and at halftime of IU's game against Alabama. I'm Aubrey Wright.
And now I'm joined by Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette. Thank you for being here and Happy New Year, friend.
Happy New Year.
It's the holidays and also award season for many local sports. Let's start with girls volleyball because we have a local winner for this year's Glass Spike Award.
Yes, so this is the award that goes every year to the most outstanding player of the SAC. Does not have to be a senior, but this year it was. It was Concordia's Kira Dahmer. She is a setter, and she was a four-year starter for Concordia. And, you know, I talked a little bit to their coach about it. You know, this is a coach who's been there for well over a decade, unprecedented in her time at Concordia. So Kira finished with more than 3,000 assists. Again, kind of unprecedented and really only possible if you start for 4 years, which she did. And if you have some pretty successful seasons in there. And as she said, the system that they run is very reliant on their mids and a setter to really set up those mids. And as she said, Kira's the kind of player who can make a bad pass look good. And so she has really been the force behind that Concordia offense over the past couple years.
She's not the only local volleyball player to take home a big-time award this week. Carroll's Bailey Sinish received some statewide recognition as well.
Yes, so Bailey has now officially won just about everything there is to win. So she was the Indiana Ms. Volleyball 2025, and that is reserved only for seniors. It's for the most outstanding senior volleyball player in the state. Now, if you're wondering, how did she not win the Glass Spike Award? That is because Carroll is not a member of the SAC in volleyball, so that's why she was not eligible. But she is the Ms. Volleyball Award winner that was announced at the end of November at the All-Star Games. That's kind of like the postseason celebration for Indiana volleyball. She is also the Indiana Max Preps Player of the Year. She is a Max Preps All-American player, holds numerous Carroll Awards, helped the Chargers to 50 straight victories that dates back to October of 2024, two state titles, absolutely unprecedented in the history of Carroll volleyball. And she is going to be going to IU Indy, which, funnily enough, is the same college where her mom, Coach Pandy Sinish, played volleyball. But that's when it was still IUPUI. So as her coach and her mother, was same person, were saying that she's just gotten used to calling it IU Indy. But it was really fun because I got to talk to Bailey and Pandy Sinish, her mom and coach, and then a bunch of her teammates. And so many of her teammates have said that she's one of the best volleyball players you'll ever meet, but she's also one of the most humble and gracious people that you will ever meet. And not only is she obviously a great teammate to have out there on the floor, a great asset for Carroll volleyball from a volleyball perspective, but also just a really, really kind and fun to be around teammate who makes life easy. So a really great recognition for someone who has had an incredible impact on this program that is now joined the ranks of some of the best in the state.
Let's stick on Carroll for a moment. Senior football player Jaden Van Pelt brought home some hardware too. Tell us about that.
Yes, so the Yule Wilson Award goes every year to an outstanding SAC senior football player. This year it was Carroll wide receiver Jaden Van Pelt. He's been just electric for Carroll over the last two seasons. He has caught 30 touchdown passes for the Chargers and rushed for two more over these past 2 years. So last year, he was the top receiver for Jimmy Sullivan, who was last year's Yule Wilson Award winner. Probably thought, you know, what's the likelihood that he's going to top it this year? And he did. This year, he caught 69 passes for 1,407 yards. And he also had 30 tackles and 3 interceptions on defense. So pretty impactful player on both sides of the ball. Got the chance to talk to his mom, who said that, you know, it's really cool to see a little kid who was absolutely obsessed with football from a really young age, could not get him to put the football down. As she said, like, he would bring it to the grocery store. He would bring the football to Lowe's. He would bring the football to go visit people's houses. You try to tell him, don't throw the ball inside. And it just was not going to work. So it is really fun to see somebody who has been dreaming about this for so many years accomplish their goals and get to live out their dreams in this way. So really fun to watch him play over the last 2 years. Still looking for a college home and a place to play football for hopefully 4 more years. So we're all looking forward to see where he goes next.
It's finally the new year. There's a lot of optimism in the air. Many of us are looking forward to new things. What are some things that you're hoping to see in sports in 2026, local or otherwise?
Well, locally, I'm really excited to see girls postseason basketball. Obviously, we had a great year last year with both Warsaw and Norwell going to the state finals, Norwell winning the Class 3A state title. This year, there's going to be a lot of teams kind of in the mix again. Once again, Warsaw has been having a great season, could again be a contender in 4A. Homestead was one of the teams to watch coming into this season. They've got some pretty big wins. They're now in the same sectional as Norwell. So I'm really excited to see which team comes out of our area in Class 4A, because I think that they can make a really long run this year if everything kind of breaks right for them. Meanwhile, winning the NE8 might not even be that easy for Norwell, because Belmont has been having an absolutely awesome season so far. I believe they've only got one loss. The NE8, still not a decided thing. So there's a lot of things to look forward to in girls basketball. Boys basketball season, meanwhile, is just getting started. So that's kind of what I'm excited for in high schools. If we kind of turn our attention more nationally, we were just talking about the NFL playoff picture and what all that's looking like. And so it's been a rough couple of years for my Patriots, but we were just talking about the fact that the Broncos and the Patriots are both 13-3 and both have already clinched their divisions. But if the Patriots win this weekend in the regular season finale, which is seemingly possible as they're playing the Miami Dolphins, and if the Broncos have a loss in their regular season finale against the LA Chargers, the Patriots could be looking at the number one seed in the AFC playoffs again, which does remind me a bit of my childhood, but it's been a little bit. So I'm excited to see how these NFL playoffs go.
Yeah, top of my list is the 7th seed Packers in the NFC getting a revenge game against the Chicago Bears. So I actually have to root for the Bears on Sunday against the Detroit Lions, because that would secure the 2 seed for them. And then the Packers get to hopefully redeem themselves after that December 20th loss at Soldier Field. Victoria Jacobson, covering all angles of local sports for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Fort Wayne Comets return to the Coliseum Ice Wednesday night for a New Year's Eve showdown against the Bloomington Bison. They had a bit of an extended holiday break due to the work stoppage that suspended several games across the entire ECHL. That dispute came to an end Tuesday with the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement between the ECHL and the Professional Hockey Players Association. Games resumed around the league that night. 2 Comets home games were postponed as a result of the stoppage. The team says they're working with the league and the Coliseum to reschedule those dates. They're back on the road this weekend with 2 against the Kansas City Mavericks in Independence, Missouri, Friday and Saturday. The next time Northeast Indiana residents will be able to see their team on home ice is January 9th against Cincinnati. The Comets currently lead the Central Division of the Western Conference. With 1 game left to play, the Colts season has mostly come to an end with their playoff hopes fully in the rearview mirror. The weird Phillip Rivers comeback experiment also appears to be over, as Notre Dame alum Riley Leonard has been tapped to start the season finale. They're in Houston on Sunday, and kickoff is at 1. Now our attention turns to the playoff scenarios, and it should be an exciting weekend in the NFL. Those Houston Texans have something to play for. They're in the running to win the AFC South. If they beat the Colts and the Jacksonville Jaguars lose to the Tennessee Titans, the division is theirs. But if the Jaguars win, then they take the South outright. Even if they lose and the Texans lose, the division is Jacksonville's. The number 1 seed in the AFC is currently a toss-up between the Broncos and the Patriots. If the Broncos beat the Chargers Sunday, it's all theirs. If they lose that game and the Patriots beat the Dolphins, then New England claims the top spot. The Jags are also in the running for that top seed, but they need to win and need the Broncos and Patriots to lose, so they're the biggest long shot. As a Packers fan, my team is locked into the NFC's 7th seed, meaning they'll play either the Bears or the Eagles depending on Sunday's outcomes. If the Bears beat the Detroit Lions, Green Bay will travel back to Chicago and face their rival for the 3rd time in 6 weeks. If the Bears and Eagles lose, the Packers are still headed to Chicago. If the Bears lose and the Eagles win, they head to Philadelphia instead. They're not all this convoluted. We've got a great doubleheader Saturday that will decide other NFC seeds. It starts with a battle between the Buccaneers and Panthers. The winner goes to the playoffs as the NFC South champion, and the loser goes home. Then later that evening, the Seahawks and 49ers will square off in Santa Clara to determine the number 1 seed in the conference. I'm planning my whole day around these 2 games. In the AFC, the Steelers and Ravens will face off in the final game of the regular season Sunday nights with the AFC North on the line. Whoever wins takes the division and goes to the playoffs. Whoever loses watches from home. Whew. How does Steve Kornacki do it? In basketball, the Purdue men's team is back up to number 5 nationally. They'll take on the Wisconsin Badgers on the road Saturday before coming back to host Washington next week. The Pacers are once again struggling mightily, 20 games under 500 at this point in the season. They're hosting Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs tomorrow, before heading to Orlando Sunday and returning Tuesday to take on Cleveland. That's all for Field Notes this week. Field Notes comes out every Thursday. We'll see you next week, and Happy New Year. I'm Zach Bernard.
Music for Field Notes is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. You can support this podcast anytime at wboi.org/donate. You and I are listening to WBOI.